It's Tuned To Yesterday, bringing you shows from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVernier. Lots of laughs coming up in this hour with sitcoms. Later on, we hear Duffy's Tavern from 1951. But right now, it's The Halls of Ivy with Ronald and Benita Coleman. One of Hollywood's most popular couples, they star in a broadcast from June 11, 1952 on NBC.
This is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy.
The Halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. The final weeks of any college semester are crowded ones, and Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy, has just put in a strenuous day at his office and returns home to number one faculty row and his wife, Victoria, with gratitude and relief.
Vicky, you home? I hope.
Oh, hello, Lamb. You sound tired.
Yes, your tired lamb has returned to the fold and about ready to.
Ready to what?
The fold.
Oh, well, collapse in your chair, darling, and tell me all about it.
If you don't mind, I'd rather not. That would require a recharging of my mental batteries, and at the moment, I would away with thinking.
Which away? That away?
No. I'll put it this away. I devoutly hope that we have nothing on the calendar for this evening.
Not a thing. Louise is going out. Tonight, you have a date alone with your wife.
Ah, a date alone with my wife to the exclusion of the rest of the world is a unique and happy event. Mm. And when I think of the schedule for the next 2 weeks...
Oh, I know. The faculty dinner Friday. And this weekend, we have the president's reception. Hey, oh, yes, a week from tonight. Next Wednesday, the Wellmans are coming here for dinner.
Oh, yes. Now, why did I forget that? Freudian block, perhaps.
I made the date a month ago. The Wellmans are the kind of people you can't invite at the last minute. They always think the people you really wanted suddenly drop dead and you only ask them out of desperation.
Excuse me, Dr. Hall.
Oh, good evening, Louisa.
Is it all right now?
I wasn't aware that anything was wrong.
But if I don't, the prices change.
Well, then by all means, do.
Thank you. And, Mrs. Hall, I cooked the chicken, but don't touch it.
Well, at today's prices, I'm not surprised it's sensitive.
I just don't know if I'm going to like it anyway, since she's changed the color of her hair.
Who, the chicken?
Well, she's almost old enough to be his mother. Is that all, Dr. Hall?
Oh, yes, I think that takes care of everything.
Oh, just a moment, Louisa, before you go. Is the cooked chicken for tomorrow night's dinner?
That's what I said, Mrs. Hall.
Oh.
But you'll never get me to believe she's doing the singing. Well, good night.
Good night, Louisa.
And Mrs. Hall, it's in the green one. But don't let it stand too long or it'll fall. That's eggs for you.
Louisa, for you. How did you do, Toddy?
Well, I thought you dropped more stitches than usual tonight. All I know is that I'm quite hungry, and the chicken is for tomorrow night. Now, by tomorrow, I'll have to be fed intravenously.
Oh, I'm sure that whatever is about to fall is in my new green casserole. It's probably one of her superb cheese souffles.
Mm, good. But what did she mean about the change in prices?
Well, I expect she was going to the movies. But who is it that's changed the color of her hair?
Oh, her name is Legion. Thanks to the amazing advances of our technological culture, my lady can now match her hair to her gloves, her purse, or her mood. Once found only on an automobile, the convertible top is now a mere matter of cosmetics. And the permanent, which is so ridiculously temporary...
Well, I expect Louise has forgotten her key. I'll get it, darling. But you go right ahead with your beauty shop lecture. And by the way, do you think you could fit me in tomorrow afternoon about 4:30 for a shampoo and finger wave?
Well, I don't know. Professor Heaslip's coming in for a manicure at 2. I'll have to look at my appointment book.
Why, Mr. Merriweather, come in.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
How nice of you to call.
It's nice of you to say nice, ma'am, when we both know that this is an unholy hour for visiting.
Oh, Charles, come in. Glad to see you. Yeah,
and sit down. You're just in time to hear Richard Hudnut Hall on the subject of modern makeup, or what foundation cream to use when building a foundation for a creamery.
No, Charles, I shall not subject you to my layman's opinions on such an esoteric aspect of American life.
Oh, esoteric, maybe, but don't give your wife any lessons in lily gilding. Oh. That schoolgirl complexion needs no more schooling.
Oh.
She has graduated magna cum wolf whistle.
Now, Mr. Merriweather, that's what I call finesse in flattery.
Oh, not flattery, ma'am, just honest, gasping admiration.
Now, Charles, you are a gratifying relic left over from the age of gallantry. Unfortunately, the art of praise has been neglected in this hard-bitten, pungent period of ours. When compliments are reduced to such frightening phrases as slick chick, dreamboat, and hotshot.
You're gone, kid. Real gone.
Well, I like to think of myself as a gallant character. In The Secret Life of Walter Mitty Merriweather, he sees himself in a scarlet cape and plumed hat on bended knee.
It's an odd place to wear a plumed hat.
Oh, I don't know. There's something so plebeian about a plain kneecap.
Now, finish this revolting picture, Charles. I find it quite cloak and sordid.
Oh, yes, proceed, Sir Lancelot. Or go on, Gawain.
Don't encourage me, ma'am. I'm just a Lochinvar at heart, and love laughs at Lochinvars of my age.
Oh.
But there's nothing romantic about my reason for dropping by this evening. Bill, does the name J.B. Radcliffe mean anything to you?
Radcliffe? Oh, yes, I think Mr. Wellman did mention him.
Well, I'll brief you briefly. Radcliffe is an Ivy alumnus who's been living for years in comparative obscurity until Clarence suddenly discovered he'd become a millionaire. Unhappily, Clarence was in my office a week ago when J.B. called to say he'd be going through Ivy tonight. Naturally, Clarence invited himself along for dinner.
Naturally, Clarence saw the handwriting on the endowment, didn't he?
Yes, ma'am. But Radcliffe is not what you might call enamored of Wellman. In fact, he thinks Clarence is a clunk. I tried to tell him what a fine man he was, how the Wellman ancestors were good Mayflower stock, how the Wellmans founded a certain city in New England, and Radcliffe said, "What city, Marblehead?" Yeah, that will give you an idea.
Well, is there anything I can do to alleviate the situation?
Send Mr. Wellman a telegram saying his soup factory's on fire. The Mulligatawny got too hot.
Yes, we might send it collect so he'd shoot the messenger boy and get arrested.
Yes.
Oh, no, we've got to gag Clarence somewhere.
Oh, better just let him run his course and hope for the best. After all, with a possible $1 million endowment in sight, he might be quite a graceful dinner companion.
He'll be too graceful. He'll butter Radcliffe like a breakfast bun. Now, believe me, I can get more folding money out of him with a few friendly insults than Clarence could extract with flattery, prayer, cajolery, and asking to see snapshots of his grandchildren. Well, it's my problem, kiddies. Wish me well.
Oh, we do, Mr. Merriweather. May the Radcliffe fountain pen run freely tonight.
Yes, and please let us know what success you have.
I shall. And if in a moment of mad sanity I stab Clarence with a lobster fork and they send me up the river, use your influence with the governor to get me a low number. Bye now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Charles.
How fond I am of Mr. Merriweather, darling. But I am glad that he, and not us, has Mr. Wellman on his hands for dinner tonight.
Dinner? Vicky, I'm starved. Lock the doors, barricade the windows, muffle the telephone, and let's have at the souffle.
Cozy, Toddy, just you and me and lighted candles and a sink full of dishes. Want some more coffee?
No, thank you, darling. I am surfeited, satisfied, replete, and full. I doubt if I can eat again until sometime late in August.
Well, you go in the other room and curl up with a chest problem, and I'll do the dishes.
We'll do the dishes.
No, no, my goodness. Only a few thousand of them, said she with a brave little smile.
Oh, very well.
But if you
don't
insist,
mind...
of course, here's an apron for you.
Apron? Well, haven't you something not quite so dressy? These ruffles, after all.
Well, they're very becoming to you. Turn around, I'll tie it up for you. Oh,
thank you, dear. I admit to a certain inability to tie a bow.
Oh, no, not visitors.
Well, I'll chase them away. I'll tell them Dr. Hall is not at home.
Yeah, just poke your head out of the door and say your mother doesn't want any.
Well, with this apron on, they'll think I'm my mother.
Good evening, Dr. Hall. Well, we're here.
Mr. Wellman.
Oh, I hope we're not late.
Oh, Mrs. Wellman.
Clarence and I have been looking forward to this evening.
Well, good evening. Come in.
Thank you.
Ah, I see the little woman has put you to work, Dr. Hall. Lending a helping hand in the kitchen?
Oh, no, Bunny. I think we have a treat in store for us tonight. I'll bet, Dr. Hall, that you're preparing the dinner yourself.
Dinner? Well,
yes, indeed. I put a ring around this date on my calendar. Dinner, June 11th. There's a little verse at the top of that calendar, too. It says, breaking of engagements is for the socially inept. An appointment is a promise, and a promise must be kept. I think that's a very... But where's Mrs. Hall?
Why, she's out in the kitchen.
Fixing up some little curlicues and doodads, huh? Well, that's for me. Always eat so many appetizers, never can eat any dinner. Host always has the roast left for Sunday night supper. Left overwhelming, they call me. The man who came to dinner and couldn't eat any.
Well, perhaps I can help Mrs. Hall. I'll just trot out to the kitchen.
No, please, please. We only put our guests to work when there is something really difficult to do. You know, like fixing the plumbing or painting the... No, please sit down. No, I'll go and see what I can do to save the situation. I mean, to help with the... Well, make yourselves comfortable, won't you? I'll be with you in a moment.
Well, take your time, man. Take your time. Got all evening, you know.
Vicky.
Did you get rid of whoever it was?
Vicky, it's the Wellmans. They've come for dinner.
But they can't. I mean, it's next week. And besides, we've had dinner.
We'll have to eat another. They're all dressed up for the occasion.
But I do. What do we have? There's nothing in the... Oh, yes, there's Louise's chicken. Well, if you can stall them, maybe I can sneak upstairs and get dressed.
Mr. Wellman obviously confused our invitation for next week with the Meriwether Radcliffe dinner tonight.
Then we've got to keep them here, if Ivy's going to get that endowment.
Yes, we'd better. Oh, I'm appalled at the prospect of another dinner, but as Byron said, all history attests that happiness for man, the hungry sinner, since Eve ate apples, much depends on dinner.
It's an old room, but really quite lovely, Bunny. Of course, I could never live with those Drakes.
Why not? What's the matter with them?
Oh, they're much too busy.
Busy? Doing what? Just hanging there.
Well, I mean, Bunny, a quieter pattern. Oh, and I should think she'd have more flowers around. I've heard so much about her roses.
What's the matter with that clump on the piano? Very pretty.
Yes, but for a party. Bunny, what do you suppose has happened to their maid?
Don't know and don't care much. Can't understand her anyway. Always talks like she was skipping rope at the same time. Relax, Bertie. They probably let her off for tonight to make it more intimate. Paul usually knows what he's doing,
Hello, Mr. Wellman.
How do you
Mrs.
do, Mrs.
Wellman? Well, I'm so sorry you've had to wait, but this has been one of those days when everything got mixed up.
Oh, I know just how that is, Mrs. Hall.
Yeah, and then something unexpected came up for our housekeeper, so I hope you won't mind having potluck.
Don't be modest, Mrs. Hall. We've been here before. We know all about what kind of a dinner you serve.
Ah, here we are. Everything finally seems to be organized in the culinary department. I have a few hors d'oeuvres here that may help to assuage the pangs of hunger. Mrs. Wellman?
Why, thank you. Now, let me see. What's that intriguing little one there in the middle?
Oh, hors d'oeuvres like magic tricks. If you tell how they're done, everybody says, oh, for heaven's sake, anybody could do that.
I love them and don't care how they're made. I'd eat the cap off a beer bottle if it had a piece of cheese and a slice of olive on it. A visual appeal, I suppose. Now, in my soup advertising, I insist on full color. How can you sell beautiful tomato soup in black and white ads? Looks like a bowl of melted golf balls.
You know, I've always wondered why they're called hors d'oeuvre.
Well, it's from the French and means literally outside of the work.
Oh, how interesting.
You mean outside of work I hate hors d'oeuvre most?
No, Vicky, but the origin of the phrase is not generally known. It seems there was a pastry cook in the royal kitchens of Louis the Pious. His name was Gaston Flambeau. And his specialty was serving tremendous pastries, which, when opened, revealed beautiful peasant girls with lutes.
Lutes? You mean lieutenants?
No, Bunny. A lute was a musical instrument.
Oh.
How did Gaston go from big pastries to hors d'oeuvre? Did he run out of peasant girls?
No, dear. It was, it was all due to the famine of the year 823. You see, in desperation, the royal kitchens had to satisfy the royal appetite with reduced but tasty novelties. And Gaston Flambeau was so successful at utilizing leftovers that he was made a duke. Yes, this, of course, broke his spirit because his heart was in the kitchen. He spent his last years hanging about the scullery, muttering, hors d'oeuvre, hors d'oeuvre, out of work, out of work.
You see, Bertha, what'd they tell you? This man knows everything.
Oh, what a delightful bit of history.
Well, when better history is made, my boy'll make it.
Thank you, my darling.
Why can't you ever remember little facts like that, Bunny?
Bunny?
Well, just a little nickname. We met on Easter.
Charming.
Yes, I saw her flying across the churchyard, and I call her Bertie.
Now, Clarence, you know the Halls aren't interested in hearing that old story.
Oh, on the contrary, Mrs. Wellman, I'm delighted to hear about such personal history.
Yes, Dr. Hall, I may be a bear as chairman of the Board of Governors, but when the day is done, after office hours...
You're a lamb, Mr. Wellman.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Hall. Well, you too. Don't know what Dr. Hall would do without you. Charm, balance, common sense, and taste.
Taste? Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Wellman. That's a perfect cue. Dinner is served. Another cup of coffee, Mr. Wellman?
No, thank you. Now, where was I? Yes. It was in the spring of 1911 when George Usher...
No, Bunny. It was the fall of 1912. And it wasn't George. It was his cousin John. You see, Dr. Hall, John Usher was an old friend of my family. You remember the Ushers of North Platte, Nebraska?
Well, no, I don't believe them.
Oh, they were very prominent people. They had the largest sporting goods store in North Platte, and it was no time at all before Clarence became manager.
Bertie, will you let me tell it, please? You're getting it all backwards. Dr. Hall, I don't know whether I ever told you before, but I began my career by tying flies.
Flies? What'd you tie them to?
The art of tying flies is strictly piscatorial.
But what about the Humane Society? The idea of tying up little flies.
Trout flies, Mrs. Hall.
Well, trout flies makes it even worse. A house fly might not mind being tied up in the house, but a trout fly used to the great outdoors.
Mrs. Hall, these were artificial flies.
I don't think their social attitudes are important, Mr. Will. Maybe they just acted artificial. I mean...
Victoria, dear, they were imitation flies made of silk and thread, used by fishermen as lures.
Yes, darling, thank you. And now we're even for Gaston Flambeau. But now tell us, Mr. Wellman, what happened after your successful career as a tie flyer?
A tri-fly tire, my dear.
As a tri-flyer. It doesn't sound right, does it? Tri-flyer.
No, dear. Let's try forgetting it. Excuse me. Dr. Hall speaking.
Hello, Bill. Merriweather.
Oh, hello, Mr. Merriweather.
I hope I didn't get you up.
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, we have company.
Well, then I'll make this a short report. Radcliffe is in the bag. Gave me a whopping big check for Ivy. $750,000.
Oh.
And that ain't coleslaw, brother.
No, it's definitely more nourishing.
By the way, what do you suppose happened to Clarence? He never showed up.
Oh, it's been a delightful evening.
Whose evening?
Yes, the Wellmans were here for dinner, you know. As a matter of fact, we're just sitting around chatting.
Oh, thanks, Bill. I don't know how you did it, but tell me all about your devious tactics tomorrow. And now I give you back to Clarence and his birdie. Bye.
Bye, Charles.
Tell me, William, how is Mr. Merriweather feeling now?
Splendid, Victoria, just splendid.
Oh, has he been sick? That's too bad. He's such a nice man.
Sick? Nonsense. I just saw him this morning. Looked perfectly all right to me. As a matter of fact, we were supposed to be together. That is... I distinctly marked the calendar. I put the ring around the rosy. I mean, the date. I shouldn't be here. This is a trick.
Why, what do you mean, Mr. Wellman? Who would trick you and for what?
Merriweather had dinner with Radcliffe tonight, didn't he?
Yes, Mr. Wellman, he did mention something.
Mention? That's where I was supposed to be, but you made me make a mistake. That is, you misled. I thought... I got my mixed. That is, my date. I was sure... What happened?
You came here to dinner tonight, Mr. Wellman, remember?
Oh, you mean you weren't expecting us until next Wednesday? Oh, how dreadful of us, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, not at all, Mr.
Why,
Wellman.
Why, Bernie, how could you?
Me? What did I do? I suppose
well,
I...
Well, Mr. Wellman, you were so emphatic about the fact that you had ringed this date that... that we thought perhaps we were the ones who had made the mistake.
Don't you try to crawl out of it now, Dr. Hall. You didn't make any mistake. I did. All I want to know is, why did you let me do it? You knew Merriweather and Radcliffe were expecting me. You knew I had no business being here. So why didn't you throw me out? Why, Dr. Hall? Why?
I enjoyed myself thoroughly tonight, Toddy, despite all that panic and mixed up. And incidentally, darling, was the dinner too bad?
Which dinner? The one we ate or the one the Wellmans ate?
Oh, excuse me.
Hello, Louisa.
You too, Stilla.
Did you have a nice evening?
I don't know why I bothered. I couldn't see any difference in her hair at all.
Oh, that's too bad. After all, you're worrying.
It wasn't in Technicolor, so how could you tell? Well, I'm all done in. Good night.
Good night, Louisa.
Yeah, darling, you know, I'm kind of done in myself.
Yes, our nice quiet evening. Mm. But it was well spent, Vicky. And may I say that you came through in the crisis magnificently.
Well, you know me. Quick study, and if you haven't got a script, you have to ad lib.
Excuse me, Mrs. Hall. What happened to the chicken?
Oh, Louisa, we forgot to tell you. We had it for dinner.
But the souffle, that's gone too.
Well, we had two dinners, Louisa.
Were you that hungry, Dr. Hall?
No, but our guests were.
Well, it's not that I mind, but the chicken was for tomorrow night.
Yes, we know, but you may sleep tonight in the happy knowledge that your chicken may be listed with man's other feathered friends of history.
Such as which?
Well, such as the seagulls, which saved the Mormon crops in Utah. The ravens which fed Elijah. The geese whose cackling warned an ancient city of an impending invasion.
What about my chicken?
Yes, darling, tie that fly. Connect it historically.
Well, Louisa, having your chicken on hand tonight made it possible for us to feed Mr. and Mrs. Wellman, thus setting Mr. Merriweather free to catch a benevolent goose which laid this college a golden egg.
Same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Louisa is played by Elizabeth Patterson. Mr. Wellman is Herbert Butterfield. Mr. Merriweather is Gail Gordon. And Mrs. Wellman is Sarah Selby. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Oh, we love the halls of ivy that surround us here today.
This production of the Halls of Ivy was broadcast with an actual audience present in the studio.
The Halls of Ivy on Tuned to Yesterday from June 11th, 1952 on NBC. The show had been on the air for 3 years at that point, part of NBC's Wednesday night lineup at 8 o'clock. Over 7.5 million people were tuned in. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. And now it's Duffy's Tavern from December 14th, 1951 on NBC. Ed Gardner stars as Archie, along with Charlie Cantor and Hazel Shermett.
Duffy's Tavern, starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner. And now, here we go, friends, to Duffy's Tavern with Burt Gordon as the Mad Russian, Hazel Shermett as Miss Duffy, our guest, Phil Baker, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat. Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Tonight, Phil Baker from the $64 question. You know, take it or leave it. Yeah, that's where you stand up in front of everybody and ask your questions. Sort of a night court with prizes. Well, anyway, Duffy, you ought to see what I got on the menu. In honor of Phil Baker, special take it or leave it dinner. Well, so far, one guy took it and he left it. But it'll be nice to see Phil again, though. He's an old friend of mine. Huh? An old friend of yours coming down tonight, too? An accountant to check the books, huh? An accountant? What do I care, Duffy? My conscience is clean.
So is the cash register.
Duffy, please. Look, Duffy, this is a fine accusation. After all the years I've worked for you, I'm surprised. In fact, I'm hurt. That's all our many years of association means to you. I'm sorry. Holy cat, he's wise to me. What am I gonna do?
Oh, 10 to 20 years.
What am I worrying about? Your old man is just trying to scare me, that's all.
Well, why don't you show him the books and scare him back?
There's nothing wrong with them books. The books is perfect.
Good evening. I am Elmer Water Price, CPA.
Oh. Dissatisfied public accountant, huh?
You're Archie, I take it.
He's Archie, and he took it.
Stop it. Look, well, make yourself to home, Mr. Water Price. Here, let me take your hat and briefcase.
Just a minute. All I want to do is look at the books.
Hey!
I said I want you to show me the books.
Can't hear a word you're saying, stranger.
That's funny. I can hear them perfectly.
Okay, then you show them the books.
Young man, Young man, stop that stalling. Now, where are the books?
Elmer, come here. You're a family man, ain't you?
Yes.
You got a wife and kiddies that love you dearly?
Why, yes, I have.
Elmer, it so happens that I'm soon going to be loaded with dough. You see, I got a picture called The Man with My Face. And United Artists themselves is releasing it, and naturally, we're figuring on making a lot of money, see?
Yes, go on.
So I thought, I think I got him winging. I thought maybe if I gave you and the family a couple of passes to the picture...
Young man, do you know that bribing is a penal offense?
Okay, then penal me. The books is over there on the counter. What a phony accountant.
Gee, Archie, do you think he'll find out the books don't balance?
How can he miss? Things are either balanced or they're unbalanced.
How do you do?
Russian.
Yes?
What are you doing here so early?
I am inviting you to dinner at my home so you could meet my mother.
Sorry, I'll have to meet her some other time. You see, I'm on my way to jail.
Well, in that case, you can meet my father.
Listen, you mean to tell me that your father's in jail?
Yes, they locked him up for something he didn't do.
Well, what didn't he do?
Wipe his fingerprints off the safe.
Russian, that family of yours kind of gets around, don't they?
Oh, yes, especially my brother. Every spring he goes up the river.
Up the river, to jail?
No, up the river. He's part salmon.
Russian, this is ridiculous. How could your brother be part salmon?
Mother was a fin. But you should see my sister.
Your sister, huh? What's wrong with her?
Absolutely nothing. She's a perfectly normal halibut.
Russian. Russian, did you ever have your head examined?
Yes, but they didn't find anything.
This I can understand. Now, where am I going to dig up some money now? Excuse me. Hello? Oh, hello, Phil.
It's Phil Baker.
Oh.
Huh? What? You're on your way down, but you got lost? Well, what part of town are you in? You're strolling down Park Avenue, enjoying the smell of the spring in the air? Well, start walking east till the smell turns to pastrami. Okay, see you in a little while, Phil.
Say, Archie, who is this Bill Faker?
Russian. It's Phil Baker from Take It or Leave It, the guy that gives away the $64 every week. Hey, wait a minute. You're a roper. That's the way I can get the dough to cover the shortage on the books.
Archie, you mean you're going to win as a contestant?
Why not, Miss Duffy? I have a reasonable modicum of intelligence. Got common sense, a good memory. I think fast on my feet.
Yeah, but you don't know anything.
Oh, yeah, I can answer any question anybody around here can ask.
I say, young man.
Oh, it's the accounting. Yes, sir?
I have a question for you. Why are all the figures in this column erased?
Well, you see, Elmer, the trouble is with the figures,
You now have Sing Sing. Would you like to try for Alcatraz?
Boy, this encyclopedia is full of valuable information. Abelard, Aberdeen, Abyssinia, Afghanistan. Miss Duffy, just listen to this. The average wind velocity in Afghanistan is 9.7 miles per hour. And the prevailing wind direction is from east to west.
Valuable information. What for?
Well, if I should happen to be in Afghanistan on a windy day and dames walk by in them loose sarongs, I'd know which corner to stand on.
Well, as I've always said, there's nothing like an education.
Thank you.
And what you have is nothing like an education.
Oh, yeah, wise guy? Here, take the encyclopedia. Go ahead, ask me some questions.
Okay. Oh, here's one you ought to know. What hit Sir Isaac Newton on the head?
Mrs. Isaac Newton?
You now have zero. Would you like to try for minus one?
Don't be so funny. I'll answer the next one twice to bring up the average. Now, go ahead.
All right. What is the formula for hydrogen?
That's simple. Half hydro and half gin. Go ahead, honey. Hit me with another.
Okay, answer this one. What is the population of Madagascar?
What year?
1912.
What month?
February.
The population of Madagascar for February 1912 was 2,756,824.
Holy cat, that's terrific. How'd you know?
I don't. I'm bluffing, too.
Why, it's Bill Baker! Well, Mr. $64 question himself. Bill, it's a pleasure to welcome to the tavern the star of...
Why? Because I can't take it. For goodness sake, Archie, why don't you open that window?
I can't open a window. It faces the fish market.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your apologies accepted.
I guess the fish market would object to the smell from here.
For 2 cents, I'd squeeze this guy's head together till you couldn't tell it from his accordion. By the way, Phil, you didn't happen to bring that thing, you know, the... accordion with you, by any chance.
Oh, yes, I have it right here. I'll play just as soon as we're through talking.
Phil, let's keep talking. Tell me, how's things going since you're back on your quiz show?
Never better, Arch.
You know, you must be a very brilliant person to run a program like that.
Well, one does have to know a few questions and answers.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get the questions?
I hold them in my left hand.
And the answers?
I hold them in my right hand.
Then, as I understand it, your brilliance consists of rolling your eyes from left to right.
Well, occasionally I ad-lib a bit. I blink.
How daring of you, Phil.
Well, if it isn't Phil Baker.
Archie, what is this?
What is this? No coaching from the audience, please. Phil, I'd like you to meet Miss Duffy. The question to a maiden's prayer.
How do you do, Miss Duffy? I'm very happy to know you.
$4,5098.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, well, you're always asking questions. I thought I'd give you the answer first. by the way, Mr. Baker, I have a TL for you.
Really? What's the TL?
My girlfriend, Tessie Lopchick. She thinks you're the funniest and cleverest comedian on the air.
Well, thank Miss Lopchick for me.
And believe me, that's quite a compliment from a girl who can't even understand English. And now that we've met, Mr. Baker, I have a rather personal question I'd like to ask you.
Yes?
When you take out a girl and you bring your accordion along, which one do you squeeze first?
Wow. That depends on which one has the better build.
In your case, Miss Duffy, the accordion. Now, beat it.
Say, Mr. Baker, may I interject an interjection?
What?
Alexander Graham Bell and 1942.
What's that?
Two answers. You figure out the question.
Archie, what's this? A fugitive from We the People?
Phil, it's just nature's proof that two heads is not necessarily better than one. We call it the Mad Russian.
I see. Mad Russian, how do you do?
How do you do? Is that a dollar question, or are you just making conversation?
Well, let's call it the dollar question. I'll give it to you again. How do you do?
Can I have three guesses?
All right.
I give up.
Russian, then why did you want three guesses?
I don't give up so easy.
Well, you'll have to excuse him. You see, when he was born, the doctor was nearsighted, and the Russian got slapped on the head.
Mr. Baker, speaking of questions, I have one for you.
What is it?
Name a city.
Name a city, huh? Could you give me a hint?
Try San Francisco.
Okay, San Francisco.
You're wrong. Absolutely wrong. It's Schenectady. Yes. Yes. S-C-H-E-N-E-C-T-A-D-Y.
Russian, that's amazing. You just spelled Schenectady.
I did?
Yeah.
I thought I spelled San Francisco.
Congratulations, Russian. You have just won the jerk pot. Now, Archie, how about letting me play my accordion?
Your accordion? Phil, do you have to play that stomach Steinway? It drowns everything out. A guy can't even think.
Young man, I'm still going over the books, and there are certain shortages I'd like to have explained.
Shortages. Phil, how would you like to thrill us with some nice accordion music? And make it good and loud. Terrific. Quick, play some more.
Just a minute, young man. Stop that stalling. Your books are short.
$57. $57, huh?
Archie, is there any way I can help you get the books to balance?
Mr. Baker, you couldn't get those books to balance if you held your accordion in one hand and a parasol in the other.
$57 short, that Duffy will send me to jail.
Well, we can't have that, Arch. Say, I've got an idea. Why don't we put on my $64 question show right here in the tavern tonight? If you win, you can cover the shortage.
I'm in.
Well, all you have to do is use your brains.
You're out.
Yeah? Give me that encyclopedia. Let me see now. Abelard, Aberdeen, Abyssinia. Well, Phil, I'm all set. Russian, announce the quiz show.
Presenting, Mr. Taking It or Leaving It. Phil Baker.
I thank you.
Featuring your friend, not mine, Mr. Taking It and Lousing It Up, Archie.
All right, Archie, you're our first contestant. Let's get started. Are you ready?
Go ahead, me brain is frothing at the leash.
Very well, select the category.
Select the category. Right away, he starts with a trick question.
Oh, no, no. I mean, choose a subject.
Oh, that. Well, what subjects have you got?
Well, let's see what we have on the board. Now, there's ancient Aztec ceramics, early Buddhist poetry, medieval Slavic etymology.
Huh? How about famous saloons on Third Avenue?
No, I'm sorry, we don't have that. Now, how about calculus or ancient Roman history?
Ancient Roman history, that sounds pretty good. Maybe, huh? Phil, ain't you got something a little more cultural?
Cultural?
Yeah, easy.
The only subjects left are baseball and etiquette.
That's right up my alley.
Baseball?
No, etiquette.
Very well, the subject is etiquette. Now, for $1, what is etiquette?
Well, etiquette is...
That's correct. You have $1. Now,
Hey, I'm hot tonight, huh?
How would you like to try for $2?
You think I'm going to quit when I'm in the middle of a winning streak?
All right, for $2. What is a finger bowl?
Oh, finger bowl. It's etiquette, huh? Yeah, that's the thing you wash your fingers in.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah. In case your fingers is full of mashed potatoes.
What are you trying to do? Talk your way back to zero? Now, for $4, who wrote the Book of Etiquette?
Who wrote the Book of Etiquette? Phil, could you give me a hint?
Okay. The last name is Post.
Uh-huh. Could you hint me the first name?
No, but I'll tell you this. The initial is E.
I got it.
Yes?
Edgar Allan Post.
Good. Edgar Allan Post pays you $4 for originality. Now for $8. What implement is used at the dining table for picking up lumps of sugar?
Implement. Picks up sugar. Sugar.
Tongues for the memory.
I got it.
Yeah?
Bob Hope.
What?
Bob Hope.
Picks up lumps of sugar?
It ain't hay, brother.
It ain't right either. I'll give you one more chance.
Let me see. An implement to pick up sugar.
Coaching from the audience, please.
Miss Duffy, please. Get back to work and stop waving them sugar tongs.
That's the answer.
What?
What you just said.
Get back to work?
No.
Stop waving?
No.
The sugar tongs?
Yes.
Amazing how some people have trouble with these quizzes. Phil, hit me with a $16 question.
All right, Archie. Tell me, what is the largest city in Italy?
Largest city in... Wait a minute, what's that question got to do with etiquette?
Well, what have your answers got to do with the questions? Go ahead. What is the largest city in Italy?
I see. The largest city in Italy. Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam.
I got it. What is it?
Buffalo.
Oh. No, no. Think, Archie. Where do you have to be to do as the Romans do?
Romania?
Well, we'll give you credit for a near miss. Now, shall we both try for the $32 question?
Okay, Phil, we both try for it. But leave us get back to my favorite subject of etiquette.
All right. Does one eat peas with a knife or a fork?
That's self-obvious. One uses a fork.
That's right.
Just use the knife to mash him with.
How dainty. Well... You have 32. Would you take it?
Let me see.
Or leave,
I owe the books 57.
Then why don't you try the $64 question?
You'll be sorry if you do.
You'll be in jail if you don't.
Oh, Okay, Phil, hit me again.
Very well, the $64 question. This question concerns table manners.
Oh, that's up the alley.
Now, the King of England comes to your house for dinner.
Naturally.
Where does he eat?
He eats in a dining room, of course. You think I'd put the King of England in the kitchen?
No, no. I mean, does he sit to your right or your left?
Well, if it's the King of England, he sits to me right.
That's correct. Absolutely correct. Archie, how did you know?
Well, I wouldn't want him sitting around the side of the table where he can look into the bathroom.
Archie, you're brilliant. You win $64.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Waterprice, here's the dough now, so the books won't be short. And to show you the kind of a guy you're dealing with, you can keep the change.
Just a moment, young man. I owe you an apology.
Huh?
I've made a mistake in my figures. The books are not short at all.
They ain't short? You mean I worked my brain to the bone for nothing?
Well, Archie, you've got $64. Now you can take out your girlfriend, Peaches Latour.
What? Me go out with a striptease? Me, an intellectual?
Next week.
It's time to leave Duffy's Tavern for now, but be sure to be with us again next time for another hilarious get-together at everybody's favorite tavern.
Duffy's Tavern on Tuned to Yesterday from December 14th, 1951 on NBC. And that wraps this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.